And welcome back to the Lee Summit Town Hall Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. With me forever, it seems.
Forever and Weasel ever. Hayes. Hello, Lee Summit.
Why do you keep coming back?
I don't know. You just keep putting calendar invites on my calendar and I just show up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It happens.
Sorry, sad part of your life.
Mm-hmm. It really is, but it's all good. I actually enjoy it.
Aw, that's nice.
I mean, that's the last nice thing I'm going to say to you during the show today.
That's fair. We have a good guest this week. We're going to get to that in just one second. Just a reminder, as always, the Lee Summit Town Hall Podcast is brought to the good people by Budget Blinds of Lee Summit.
Budget Blinds. I just like to say the Budget Blinds part.
I know you do. Well, I like that you've changed it to your, you like this nice Budget Blinds.
Budget Blinds.
Not the scream of my former co-host who shall not be named.
Oh, yes. We shall not name him. No. He doesn't deserve that. Hi, Jason.
I don't know why you got to do that.
Now we're going to see if he still listens. But yes. Okay.
Did you know, though?
Did I know what?
Budget Blinds is your home for signature series shades.
It really is. And it's run by an incredible local family who gives back to our community in so many great ways. So it's definitely a place that you should check out for all of your home decor needs, especially your blinds.
That's right. You want those automated robot-powered blinds?
Yes, you do.
Or shades, which, I mean, I don't know why I say do you. I mean,
Everyone wants those.
We all want to bow before the robot shade overlords.
Yes, we do.
Go get them. Go see a great local business run by a great local family. Head on downtown Lee Summit to Budget Blinds of Lee Summit. Tell them Liesl and Nick sent you. Good show today. This is actually the first time we've had this guest on, even though he's been here a year now. But I think it's time that, for people who haven't met it yet, it's time to meet Gary Good, the executive director for the Lee Summit Symphony. You've been here a year, Gary. I'm sorry.
And it has, it's not snowed yet.
You know, false Gary, advertising. That is pretty unbelievable.
I bring that from Southern California.
There you go. I guess we had a little bit of snow this winter, but not really.
No, not at all. I even bought a sled, but.
We actually disappointed him this year.
I'm going to say this. I'm actually not disappointed in the lack of heavy snow.
I did not miss the heavy snow this year.
My theory about snow is that we should get it once a year.
Christmas Eve. Yeah, absolutely.
Let me have a white Christmas. We'll go play in the snow on Christmas. Then I don't want it anymore. It's too cold.
But you get no snow days because they're off.
Well, yeah. Look, I'm married to a teacher. I still have one son in school. So they do love their snow days. But I'm going to, as an entrepreneur who sometimes works from home, I don't want them to be home when I'm home.
Well, I will tell you, before I was in Southern California for 15 years, I was at the Milwaukee Symphony, and before that at the Buffalo Philharmonic. So we can talk snow all afternoon and never run out of stories.
I bet.
Okay, so in all the places that you lived, where did it ever snow the most that you can remember?
Oh, undoubtedly Buffalo.
Okay, that makes sense.
But it really is funny because it's all what's called lake effect snow. The wind picks up Lake Erie and dumps it on downtown Buffalo, where all the television stations are. They bravely stick a camera out the door and broadcast
it. That's right, the lazy TV station.
We had, true story, there was a big lake effect snowstorm that shut everything down in downtown Buffalo. They opened up the airport for one plane to get out. And on that plane were the Buffalo Sabres, who were playing the Long Island Islanders the next night, and the Buffalo Philharmonic, who was playing at Carnegie Hall the next night. So we went together on the plane. They got us out somehow. And wow, that brings back some great memories. The Anchor Bar in Buffalo is where chicken wings were invented.
Right.
This is freeform, right?
Absolutely. We are absolutely freeform.
Because really, all I can think about with the Buffalo snow is, right, you know, you see all the clips like before a Bills game or whatever, these people who have like the wall of snow by their driveway.
That can be a 20 mile phenomenon, really. It's that narrow. Yeah.
You mentioned Carnegie. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to guess that I might be the only person that you know that has this story. I've been kicked off the stage at Carnegie Hall.
Well, you're not the only one, but...
I always think that's like my one close claim to fame, is I was once escorted off the stage.
Is there a particular reason why you were escorted off?
I wasn't supposed to be on the
stage. Okay, that's probably a good reason.
I thought I had permission. Mm-hmm. I was in error.
Mm-hmm. Well, the orchestra played a great concert, got a terrific review, which the Buffalo News printed on the front page. So we were hometown heroes when we got back. The conductor, Simeon Bischoff, and I went into the Anchor Bar, which is where chicken wings were invented. And the whole place gave us a standing ovation, and the owner said, "You'll never buy another chicken wing in Buffalo as long as you're here."
So, that's awesome.
And that, you know, that's a little bit of the same kind of feeling I get here in Lee's Summit. There's a lot of pride within the community for the things that they have here. And sometimes it's justified, sometimes it's just hometown pride, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I've enjoyed, as I'm beginning to get to know some people and some places, just how much everybody does kind of feed off of each other. And they all know each other, too.
Many of us here like to talk about that we're a big little town.
Yeah.
I mean, the latest census has, 107,000 residents. But we still, a lot of times, feel like a small town. Especially, we're sitting here mm-hmm. talking in the middle of our historic downtown district. Can you get more small town feel than that?
You could park outside for free.
Right. It's a rare quality. Like, I feel like people don't realize how great we have it.
Right.
You know, go to Chicago or go to a big city, and there's a lot of paying for parking.
Speaking of big city, I mean, you just listed where you've worked with symphonies around the country before. What draws you here?
Great question. I came here. I have a brother who lives in Pleasant Hill. And his children live here in Greater Kansas City as well, at least some of it, as a matter of fact. And we decided a couple of years ago we would get the family together on the occasion of a Packers-Chiefs game. And being the oldest of the reigning remaining group, I boldly said I'll buy tickets for everybody to go to the game. Turned out to be $600 a ticket.
Oh, yes. Wow.
Everyone wanted to see Vice President Aaron Rodgers against Mahomes. So when I found that out, I decided I would buy two big screen TVs for the family here, and I'd still be ahead. And
yeah, I think that's probably...
That's an excellent idea.
A more responsible financial decision on your
yes,
part.
Yes, right. But while we were here, we got to know the neighborhood a little bit. We were thinking it was time to leave Southern California. We could get a good price for our house, taxes and mudslides and fires and everything else. And I'd love Southern California, but it's tough there right now. So we came across John Knox Village and took a tour and had never even thought about a planned community as a retirement option. But it just sort of made a lot of sense. The beautiful new building was going up and was going to be opening in a year. So my wife and I just downsized, put everything in a pod that we wanted to keep, mostly clothes and art. I said, "I'll tell you where to send it in several months." Got in the car and drove for 6 months around the country.
Nice.
And I'd recommend that to anyone. We just had a great, great trip. And ended up here as planned and settled in a year ago.
So what was one of your favorite spots to visit when you did that?
That driving tour?
Yes, that driving tour.
There's so many. I kind of build it around concerts or theater that I wanted to see. Niagara-on-the-Lake, outside of Buffalo, between Buffalo and Toronto, has the Shaw Festival, which is the biggest legitimate theater festival in the summer in the on the continent, I think. That's a beautiful setting. My favorite place in the whole world, Tanglewood in the Berkshires, is the home of the Boston Symphony, summer home of the Boston Symphony. So I go there every summer. Some terrific museums. The museum at Gettysburg is new. I actually grew up only 10 miles from there, but they've really done a great job with that. And a museum I would recommend to anybody who happens to be in Washington, It's been open about 3 or 4 years, is the Museum of the Bible. And it examines the Bible from religious, political, ethnic, other historical views. And everything you can imagine in a museum is there. So audience friendly. You could spend 3 or 4 days there.
Yeah, D.C. is amazing. I mean, walking around D.C. and just being able to go and experience the different museums at no cost was just incredible. And I think it's amazing that they support the arts in that way, where it is, let's make this accessible for the masses. And so that's one thing I absolutely loved about D.C.
Well, and you cannot get from there to here without going across the Kentucky Bourbon Trail.
Oh, yes.
That's highly
remembered. Now he's speaking your language.
I mean, I love a good museum tour, but you can throw some bourbon in there on the way.
You're good to go.
I'm good to go.
Many of those distilleries have museums. So
they do. There you are. They do.
I read where the Bourbon Trail is now one of the top, like, tourism things in the country right now.
Oh, really?
Like,
I didn't know that.
The amount of people that are planning that as a vacation, a particular destination vacation, is just exponentially grown over the last, like, 4 or 5 years.
I saw something recently for golfers in the Ozarks. There's a golf tour of Lake of the Ozarks or something that hits several courses.
And I will tell you, my favorite courses at Lake of the Ozarks are the tiny ones, like the little hillbilly ones.
Mm-hmm.
They're just more fun to me.
Right, right.
Well, I'm curious, and I want to talk more about art and music and kind of your passion there. But first, I want to start with, so you picked coming back to Kansas City for family, and you came across this planned neighborhood that you like. When did the connection with the local symphony come into play? Because, and I don't this isn't to speak ill of our symphony, but you know, you've been with some big ones.
Yeah.
And our symphony has grown and done a great job in now its 21st year, 22nd?
Finishing our 20th, yeah.
So, I mean, where did that connection happen?
I had an in.
I know a guy.
I was here for 6 months, 25 years ago, as a consultant to the Kansas City Symphony. They did a citywide Stravinsky Festival, which was a big deal at the time. The ballet and the opera and UMKC were involved and so forth. My niece had just graduated from college, and I got her an internship at the Kansas City Symphony, which she turned into a job very responsibly, and eventually became a stay-at-home mom to Aiden, our mutual friend, and became the development director of the Lee Summit Symphony. And when this all worked together, she was my favorite relative, of course, because she was working in the arts. And when we moved out here, she said, you know, there's this local orchestra here, and it's been very well supportive. It's been quite successful. It's grown a lot. The people who have really brought it along, Bob and Candy White, are reaching a time when they want to step back a little bit, but it's their thing and they really want to hand it off responsibly. And I don't think they had in mind that somebody who had been formerly with the Boston Symphony and the Milwaukee Symphony and so forth would be an option, but perhaps it is. So we got to talking, and It worked out beautifully, I think, for at least from my perspective, for all concerned. It's turning into a full-time, part-time job, as so many of those do. But I'm doing something that I love and that I've done for more than 40 years. So it's great to bring that view of things to what has been working here and see how we can bring it along.
As you got in, what kind of were some of your initial reactions to the symphony? And give us the dirt. Let's start there. What really piqued your interest as you got to know the symphony and kind of dug in there a little bit? I want to work with these people.
It's been a journey, and it's been really, really interesting. Probably the biggest difference is that The orchestra is made up of volunteer musicians. And I'm used to having 100 musicians as employees that I need to employ gainfully. So I look for opportunities for them to do on a daily and weekly basis. Here, every consideration of anything outside of what we're already doing, I have to factor in that I've got 80, 90 people who have real jobs during the day.
Right.
And are there just because they really enjoy playing in an ensemble. And that's motivating. It's motivating for me. It's motivating for them, I think. We're right in the middle of some strategic planning leading up to the orchestra's 25th anniversary in a few years. And I had a town meeting for the musicians last Monday. Now, this is after a weekend, full day of work. Then they rehearse for 2.5 hours until 9 o'clock without a break. That also wouldn't happen in a big orchestra. and then more than 40 of them stayed and talked for another hour and a half with me about very positive things, really. How could the orchestra expand? How could we use them in different ways? What does Lee Summit have and what does it need? So I would say the biggest similarity is that whether it's a $300, $1,000 orchestra or a $30 million budget, the passion and commitment there is the same. And
No, you go ahead. I was just about to interrupt you. I do this regularly.
Fine.
But I am curious. So as you think about, all of the knowledge and expertise that you've brought here, you said you've tried to make some changes as well, just around marketing and getting the word out about the symphony. So tell us a little bit more about some of those efforts.
Sure. We were talking offline about New Orleans and my son. I've been fortunate to raise a son who just loves the arts in every way, and from the time he was about 5, we've just fed off of that over and over and over. One of the things I learned from Ryan is that the concert, when we were going to a concert or the play or at the theater or whatever, was something that didn't begin and end in the time of the performance. But he really, and I think his generation does this more than my generation ever did, he researches. He knows going in what he's going to expect. And afterwards, he has a network, whether it's through social media or some other way, where they can dissect what they've experienced. And it becomes a much greater overall experience than just the performance itself. So, in fact, here it is.
Speaking of performances.
it's probably a good time to note that you have a concert coming up.
Yes.
This weekend on Saturday at the Pavilion at John Knox Village. Feel the Power is the title of this one. I like it because it's you've got a lot of different things in there that I think are going to relate to everyone.
They're powerful.
Well, they are powerful. I was trying to avoid the cliche. I try to do that like once a week,
yep.
Not go the cliche route.
Mm-hmm. It's okay.
But to bring back that idea of expanding the experience, I came across this talented young man who works in the management of the Kansas City Symphony. His name is J.A. Harbison. He's a great writer, and he approaches things in unconventional ways. So I said, AJ, I want to send all our ticket buyers something before the concert. We'll do it electronically. It'll have links to examples of things that they can listen to. I want them to come to this concert already expecting something that they know something about. And so we created this piece called the Concert Preview, which everybody is just absolutely loving now. I'll give you an example related to this week's program. We're doing the last movement of pictures at an exhibition, The Great Gate of Kiev. And that piece was written in the late 19th century as a piano piece by a Russian composer. then was orchestrated for full orchestra by Ravel, a French composer, in the 1920s. In the 70s, it was the genesis of a whole album, a very popular album by Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. Around that same time, there was a Japanese composer named Tomita, who was one of the first synthesizer composers, and he realized it on an electronic instrument. And there have been numerous other adaptations of the Great Kiev, including a version for drumline that was performed by the Lee Summit High School drumline 10 years ago. So in this concert preview, there are links to all of those. And people who come in to hear the performance on Saturday night are going to get the orchestral version, but they're going to have had the opportunity to have seen all these things in advance. He also tells the story in the concert preview of Tchaikovsky's experience with the 1812 Overture. You can't do a power concert and not do the 1812
that
Overture.
That is a true statement.
I was going to say, as you made the set list, for lack of a better word,
right.
Were there a few that you just went, well, we're calling it power, we have to have this, this, and this?
That's where you start, for sure. But A.J. writes about letters that Tchaikovsky wrote to his patroness, and it's often quoted by conductors because it's so funny. He says, in so many words, you wouldn't believe some of the crap I do for a commission just to earn some money. And that was his attitude about the 1812 Overture. Sadly, his other most popular work, The Nutcracker, was equally not enjoyed by him or the public in his lifetime. So his success came after his demise.
Oh, he could just see it now. I know. Every year, I just absolutely love The Nutcracker at Kaufman.
Your tradition, right?
Yes, you and it's your daughter, definitely. Yes, we do it every year. I absolutely love it. It's beautiful. I love also how you all have really spent time thinking through how do we make this more of an immersive experience? Because oftentimes, you know, we go to the symphony and we learn, you know, what's going to be played when we actually show up. And so this is such a great way to introduce people to, here's a taste of the experience. And so I love how you're making that more immersive and thinking through that in a different way. I'm sure patrons love that.
Yeah, I think you hit on something that's really big there, that it's more than the actual performance part of the event, that the event has to be more than that. And has there been some research too, and that's how you use that to get, you know, really to explain, and let's be honest and fair here, expanding people's knowledge and entry into classical music is not getting easier.
That's true.
And so by doing this, I mean, is that kind of one of those bridges?
I believe so, and I think we got there out of necessity as an art form, classical music. But I think we're understanding that now that we are there, it's not only an opportunity, but it's really part of our mission, really, to take this repertoire and share it and open it up for a new generation.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I rarely find people who truly don't like classical music. A lot of people say that.
I think a lot of people don't know
that
classical music is more than Bach, right?
Sure,
than Mozart. And if your director, Kurt Moser, were here, who I've had on the show before, you know, I'd want to go to him, because there is modern classical music. There are still things being written and arranged and composed that are beyond what we think of when we think of the classical music. And I was lucky. I grew up with it. You know, I was in that kind of sphere of things with that music. My mother still plays for, I forget what they call it. It's not the Independent Symphony anymore. They've rebranded in the last several years. But she's nearing 80 and still plays.
Mm-hmm. Good for her.
But I think, you know, you've got to, we have to tell people that there's more out there.
Right. And if we can provide an experience to which they can relate and have it augmented by good material to set it up, we got them. They'll be back.
What initially drew you to that music, and what keeps you going?
It's a great question. Now that I live in a retirement community, I should should be thinking about these things, right?
Now I just turn on the MP3 player and I listen. That's what draws me back, 'cause it's so easy.
It is. What drew me initially as a kid was that I lived in a small town in Pennsylvania that had good music programs in their schools, like we do here in Lee's Summit. And I kind of found my home there. Not too many of us left Shippensburg, Pennsylvania, to go someplace out of state to a school, but I did. And then you kind of adapt to your surroundings as they change. And as I was saying before, whether you're in a Lee Summit Symphony or a New York Philharmonic, there are so many things that cross over. Most of that is just the joy you get and the passion from listening or performing to the music.
What did you play?
The radio. I'm just waiting for that. It really would have been the funniest answer.
I did some of that. I did everything you could do with your right hand. I was a trombone major. I was a violinist. And I was a conductor, ultimately. And I wasn't good enough at any of those. So I decided to had this opportunity to take a management job with the Boston Pops. And there's where I found my home, and there was no outcry of frustration from audiences that were disappointed not seeing me. So off we went.
Much to your chagrin there, that they weren't disappointed.
Right. Actually, you mentioned the Nutcracker. I was the assistant conductor of the Boston Ballet, which meant I got to carry all the music around and get to conduct an amazing, an occasional Nutcracker matinee.
Oh, I love that.
That's awesome.
You know what we need to do? I just say we. What I need to do, I need to take my daughter to the Nutcracker somewhere else.
Destination Nutcracker.
Mm-hmm. That would be wonderful.
I like that.
I mean, experiencing at Kaufman every year is incredible that's amazing. But
you talked a lot about about this reaching out and changing the experience or enhancing the experience. What are some other things you're looking at? I know, like, the Kansas City Symphony has added its, where they play the soundtrack to movies and they show movies has been great. That was how my son first saw E.T. I didn't get to go. I really wanted to go. They did Goonies about a month ago.
Oh, did they really?
Really sad that I was out of town and couldn't go to that one. But, I mean, what are some things that the Lee Summit Symphony is looking at in addition to this concert coming up?
I can't tell you.
Wait a minute.
It's top secret.
I just hit the unrecord button. Uh-huh, so sure you did. Into the microphone. Mm-hmm. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge.
In some ways, I can't tell you because it feels to me as if the orchestra has reached one finish line. This 20th anniversary has been a great season for the orchestra. Saturday night's concert is one of the biggest crowds we've had. We're probably going to start repeating our holiday concert. It's been so much in demand. We did the concert at the Kauffman Center last August, which was just a great experience for everyone.
What a treat for the artists,
yes,
too.
Yes, yes, yes. I've told the story. I was so proud because it was a rainy day. It was an August Sunday afternoon. And we played the concert. And after the concert, I did some things backstage. And then I went out into the Kauffman Center, a big glass lobby. And the rain had gone away, the sun had come out, and nobody wanted to leave. Musicians were getting reconnected with their families and other members of the audience, and they were just all milling around with the sun streaming in, this wonderful feeling. It just felt almost spiritual the way it all came together with this performance. But there are so many facets of the orchestra that are worth exploring. We have 35 members of the orchestra who have been there all 20 years to see what we can do with them. Some of our titled players and principal chairs would like to be doing some chamber music, ensembles, and smaller orchestra kinds of things. I hope we can find ways to be throughout the community more than just at the pavilion at John Knox. And that's a wonderful home for us. They're so helpful to us. But I want the Lee Summit Symphony to be Lee Summit's Symphony. And I'm looking forward to the new, it's called the Marketplace.
The new Market Plaza development?
Yes.
Yeah.
I hope there'll be opportunities for the orchestra to play there.
I think that Liesl and I can safely tell you that there will be many an opportunity.
Great.
Absolutely. Because, you know, it is very exciting.
We control everything. I don't think you
yes. You're still new to town. We absolutely control the whole city. Absolutely.
I'm learning. Mm-hmm. That will be great to have more venues. And look, we can just say this now. If there's anybody listening in Lee Summit that's just got, you know, say $4 or $10 million lying around, you know, we'd love to have a building, a mm-hmm. cultural arts center in Lee Summit.
Absolutely.
For all of our symphony and theater and
so what about people arts. Who are passionate about playing? Maybe they haven't picked up their violin in a while and they want to start getting engaged. What does that look like?
Well, for the Lee Summit Symphony, it looks like there will be a place for you. There is an audition. There's information about that on our website. I had just this week three expressions of interest from violinists who empty nesters now, and violins come out of the closet and they're getting their chops back together, and they'd like to
more cellists.
To play.
You need more cellists. Violinists are dime a dozen. Get more cellists.
You need more cellists. You're funny. Did you play the cello?
I might be biased.
I definitely played the violin. I feel like you were just insulting me over here. See how that goes. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. My brother was violin. My mother was viola, and I was cello.
There you go.
No kidding. You had a trio there.
And then that's where the joke earlier. My dad would say, "I play the radio."
Mm-hmm. Right. But as I said, there are a significant number of players who have been with the orchestra all 20 years. There are, believe it or not, and actually it's in the program, a very moving tribute from Kurt. This is National Music in Our Schools Month. And we have 40 teachers, public school, university, private teachers, who are playing in the orchestra.
Oh, nice.
And I think what I'm told is that Russ Berlin, the founder of the orchestra, really conceived the orchestra as a way to a vehicle for students who were graduating and wanted to play, or went to college and came back and wanted to play. So there are an amazing number of lifers in the orchestra.
What a great way to shine a light on the educators.
Yes. Well, I encourage you to read Kurt's comments. They're really, really beautiful. And, you know, local boy makes good. There you are.
Now, I'm assuming you've been here a year that you've heard the story and the connection between Russ and Kurt as teacher and student.
Yes. I know some stories.
It is a great story to me that, you know, something that started mm-hmm. where Russ Berlin was Kurt's teacher
yep.
in high school, and then as an adult passes the baton to Kurt, who went on to be an educator.
Right. And I think Kurt almost feels that equally, because he talks about how many years he wants to be here with the orchestra, and when should we get an assistant conductor that can take the next step. It's unusual to think of somebody who's not intending to go anywhere in the near future talking about succession. It's very important.
As a director, you're probably, oh, thank you.
Yeah. Don't forget, I'm a frustrated conductor.
So I love that.
I've heard that phrase before, but I like it.
Frustrated conductor.
Well, let's go backward just a little bit. Are there tickets still available if people want to go to Feel the Power?
Yes.
Where can they go?
Best thing to do is go online. lssymphony.org.
lssymphony.org. Tickets are still available. That concert is Saturday night at
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. It's at the Pavilion at John Knox Village, which has been the home now of the symphony for 3 or 4 years now. Has it been longer than that?
I think it's 5 years.
Five years now, which is fantastic to have. It's been a good home with great space.
Yes. I hope the roof will still be on it after this concert. We've got extra brass. In addition to the 1812 and pictures, we've got Copland's Fanfare for the Common Man, one of John Williams' big marches.
How do you choose from that portfolio, right?
Right. So just louder and louder. And then Kurt, who is really a very innovative programmer, said, you know, we're going to need some, not comic relief, but just give our ears a chance to calm down a bit. So on the first half, he's got two local singers who will be doing a beautiful duet from a French opera. And on the second half, Carl Hayes, our principal oboist, has written his own arrangement of a nice quiet ballad. So there'll be a little relief where we can catch our breath.
I'm going to make a suggestion, and this is purely selfish of me and promoting another former guest, but I would love to see sometime, and maybe a July 4 concert kind of thing, and probably not the full symphony because it might be too hard, but I would love to see the symphony playing along with, at least some of its own, the Black Neil Diamond. We have a Neil Diamond tribute artist that lives here who has an amazing story. He's been a guest on the show. Guy's been on Fallon. He used to live with the Pointer Sisters. Just a great show. He sounds like Neil Diamond.
Exactly, even like him. It's even unbelievable.
Neil Diamond has said, you sound like me.
No kidding.
Man, I want to see America. Come on, let's do the Jazz Singer for a July 4 concert. Let's make this happen.
That's an interesting idea. It
really is. That was a very polite way of saying
it. No, I didn't mean it that way. I don't mean it that way at all. It's a damn good idea.
Yes! Go Nick.
Gary, I appreciate you taking some time. We're a year late, but welcome to Leaf Summit.
Thank you. We're happy to be here.
And I am looking forward to the show. I know a lot of people are. And you've got space. You can add more seats.
That's right.
Go buy tickets, folks. LSSymphony.org. Tickets still available to go to Feel the Power.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Gary, thanks so much. That'll wrap us up for this episode. We'll talk to everybody next time.